Hello and welcome to episode 11 of the V2 Academy. I'm Chris Laffin, and as always, I'm joined by Peter Prickett. How are you doing, Stephen Peter?
Good, thanks. Good evening, everyone.
All right, shortly we're going to be joined by Manchester United Academy coach Tom Statham. But first, as it's the end of the season, I thought we would quickly discuss award shows and particularly how many awards should be given out. This came about because I had a discussion with a player who's moved clubs, and at his old club, everybody got something. And at his new club, only the player's player gets it, and it's I think it's most improved player.
When you say everybody got something, what did they get? Do you know?
He didn't go into much detail, but he was up. I'm guessing. Well, like he said last year, he got one for effort.
Okay.
So I think participation award.
Participation. Yeah. Should we give people awards just because they tried? Or should they just try anyway?
Yeah.
Just a thought. I don't think that they should get nothing. If they put in the season and they've worked hard and they've been committed, they should get something better, more than just a well done.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that they should be given a trophy or a medal for showing up.
Mm.
You get a trophy or a medal if you earn it in other ways. This year, we just, at my club, we've got rid of the participation medal and trophy.
Yeah.
It's taken a long time, but I finally had enough support that when I said, guys, can we buy footballs instead? I got enough support that it got through. So they don't get a medal or trophy for participating, they get a size 2 football. The reason I chose a size 2 was because you could treat it as a skill ball for all of them. So, we are still giving out players' player, parents' player, coaches' player.
Yeah.
But unless they have been particularly successful in their league or cup or whatever, and the officials, the FA or whoever it is running the competition, have handed us medals to give out for a successful, however you want to look at it, a successful season on the pitch, they're not receiving a medal or trophy. But they are getting something, and hopefully something that they can use.
Quickly remind me, listeners, what age you work with.
Well, my particular team, I've got under-16s at the moment. They'll be under-17s next season. But at the club, I oversee everyone.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the training season, I took the new set of what will be under-8s next year. I can't say they're under-7s now. They only had 4 weeks of training, so they won't be getting anything. Not surprisingly. Hopefully they come back in the summer. Yeah.
Well, my argument with him was that if he didn't win anything this year, would the disappointments make him play better next season or make him improve his skills for next season?
I'm not sure that the motivation in the lower reaches of grassroots football really works in that way. And also, you just don't know the way that leagues get reorganised. You don't know who your opposition are going to be. I mean, suddenly a team can become really successful next year, having been quite average the previous year, and the reason is that there's been a reshuffle and they're actually in with a whole bunch of not very good teams.
Yeah.
It's not that they've improved particularly, but who they're playing against, just the standards just fallen off a cliff.
So in my research, I found a club who definitely give an award to everybody, but they don't call it a participation award. Here's a list of some of the awards. They had a player's player and player of the season. They also had the good sports award.
That's being a nice guy.
The winning spirit award.
Thanks.
Most fun player award.
Best. That's we like you. That's we like you, but you're not very good.
Yeah. Best effort award.
Yeah.
Leadership award. Team spirit award. Most energetic player. Best listener. Role model. Best teammate. Communications. The love of the game award. And 110% award. It's 40 so in awards. So I assume it's one bit by.
I'm guessing that the club that gives the 110% award doesn't also give an award for maths.
Isn't given 110% and the best efforts award? I think a lot of them are the same thing. They just need to call them all different things.
They are. I think a lot of those are for the guy who turned up and tried quite hard but wasn't very good.
Yeah.
But they just don't want to call it that. There's one that I was at a club where they gave Clubman of the Year award. I'm a little bit torn on these because someone who does turn up and show a good attitude and so on, role model, is great, but again, should we give an award to someone who's just doing
his best?
What they should be doing. I'm turning into Steve Buscemi at the beginning of Reservoir Dogs here. We're talking about tipping.
Yeah.
Do we reward people for just doing what they're supposed to do? I don't know. I'm not sure. It depends what the award is as well.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I know that there are some clubs who did their award ceremonies quite early, did it at Easter, and they gave all of their players an Easter egg.
Yeah.
That was their end of season, thank you for being a part of it award.
I think for most of these they gave out certificates, I think that's what he said.
So. Yeah, it was, and that, I don't mind that either, but without being too harsh, medals and trophies are for success on the pitch, I think. However old you are, if you teach people you get medals and trophies for not being successful, you're probably not going to get successful players. And I'm going to make it clear again that I'm not saying don't give them something.
Yeah.
Give them something. But just don't give them the same thing that they get if they are actually victorious.
And we're delighted to be joined online by Tom Statham. How are you doing this evening, Tom?
Very well, thank you, Chris.
How have you been since we last spoke in 2015?
All good, really. Just luckily carrying on the work that I was doing at the time, my coaching and setting up different tournaments and festivals and things like that. So, yeah, it's all been good, thanks.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, Tom is a football coach with over 20 years' experience with Man United and was the FA's Foundation Phase Academy Coach of the Year in 2015. And and any opinions Tom gives during this interview are his own and not that of Man United.
Yeah, it's important just to get clear. I'm speaking as an individual.
Yeah.
I'm not representing the club at all.
All right, so just quickly for those who didn't hear the first interview, can you remind us how you got into the game?
Like a lot of people that really work in football, I played at a brief professional career. I played for the likes of Doncaster, Lincoln City, Middlesbrough in the early 90s. And then when I finished playing, I went into teaching. I was at Loughborough University before I went into professional football, which is quite unusual. And then, so when I finished playing, I went into teaching and I was a PE teacher and got a job in the Manchester area and got invited to work in the academy in that was in 1993. I got invited, started at the beginning of 94.
Yeah.
And I've been lucky enough to be working in the academy at Manchester United from that time.
Yeah, and away from Man United, you run specialistsoccertours.co.uk. Can you tell us a bit about the company?
Yeah, I also, one of the other things I work in is private education. So I've also, as well as working at Manchester United, I've worked at Shrewsbury School and I've been the director of football coaching at Repton School since 2005.
Yeah.
And specialist soccer tours was a way of combining the two worlds of professional football and private schools, because private schools have got fantastic facilities, boarding facilities, great kitchen and food facilities. So it's an ideal place to stage festivals and tournaments. So I just, first of all, it was almost an accident from talking to people that I knew in academies and said, well, I'll put something on, something pre-season. We got together and at Shrewsbury School it was initially, and used the great pitches and the boarding facilities at Shrewsbury School. We got a few clubs together and it's just grown from there. That was, again, probably about 2004 when that began. And then it's grown. So now I run various tournaments and festivals through Easter and summer, involving teams from all over the world, really. I've got teams from America, teams from Scandinavia, different parts of Europe, and as well as mostly UK-based teams from Scotland and Ireland as well. So, yeah, it's really rewarding. And it's great to see. I get a big kick when I see teams like Aberdeen playing against Plymouth Argyle and things like that, where the games wouldn't have happened unless they'd come together at my festival. So, yeah, that's what I enjoy doing, really, during the summer.
So is it the festival, is it a tournament, or is it just play friendly games?
I do both. So it has been just festivals, so usually pre-season, where teams can get together in say really good conditions, really good environment, where the emphasis isn't on the results, but it's just on player and coach development. And, you know, we want people to mingle after the game and eat and discuss things during the evening. I mean, what I did this year at one of my events, I just got all the coaches together one evening, and we got a room, we got some soft drinks, and we got a few beers, and we just sat around for 2.5 hours chatting about football, really informally.
Yeah.
But we got people from Norway, people from, you know, Scotland, Dundee United were there, Chelsea, Manchester United, and clubs like Bristol City. So everyone just sat around chatting football, which was fantastic. And I think that's where a lot of real learning and coach education comes from, you know, that informal setting. So, that's the sort of thing. And then, say, this year, 2016, for the first time, I actually did tournaments where we did take in the scores. I've been reluctant to do that, but because I thought it would take away from that emphasis, but it didn't at all. Mm. You know, everyone was still looking to develop players rather than, you know, trying to win games. And I think it helps being in August, because everyone's focusing on the coming season. So they want to get to know the kids, practice different systems of play possibly, and give everyone an opportunity to get some game time under the belt.
So how does your coaching as an individual differ between your days at the academy and then your days during the festival?
Well, in the festivals I don't coach at all. I'm purely there as the event organiser.
Right.
So I make sure that all the facilities that are there for the teams. We're based, this summer we've been based at Oakham School for the last 2 or 3 years, which you've got Oakham Schools in Rutland, right near Rutland Water. It's beautiful countryside. The facilities are superb. The pitches are academy standard. So my role with the tournaments and festivals at Oakham School is just purely organising the event. So because I've been a coach for so long, I know what coaches want. I know what the sort of facilities and the attention that they want during the time there. So I make sure that everything's laid on for them, and so they can just concentrate on the football. So the food is fantastic there. So the pitches are great. And so that's my role there. And obviously, when I'm working for Manchester United or Repton School, where I'm the director of football coaching, it's a private school, then I'm all about, you know, the players and looking to develop them. So the two very different roles.
So you we talk about the festivals. What do you feel that the teams get out of your festivals that they wouldn't from their normal games program?
Well, so much of working with the kids is getting to know them as individuals, because I think that's one thing as a coach that I've come to appreciate, is that people focus very much on the training session or the match, and it's a relationships business. It's something where you've got to get to know the players that you're working with, whether it's at Premier League level or whether the kids are 8, 9 years old. The most important thing is establishing that positive relationship where there's a level of trust and care between the player and the coach. And I think when you go away for 2 or 3 nights to an event like a festival or a tournament, then you can spend lots of time with the boys, you spend lots of time with them off the pitch, in meal situations, so you can sit and eat and have a chat with them in those sort of informal situations. The boarding houses that we use at Oakham School have all got common rooms with TVs and sofas and things like that, so you can sit down and chat there. They've also got meeting rooms, so you can have more formal discussions as well. So I'd say what you're getting by attending a festival is all the benefits off the field, as well as just seeing them perform on the field.
And you mentioned that the coaches get together and discuss things as well. And it just sounds like, actually, it's a very informal form of CFP for coaches and for players. It's almost like the art of conversation being rediscovered.
Definitely. And again, that's something that I've been on lots of coaching courses, and it's very formal, and you watch the mentors do a session, and then you've got to take notes, and then you've got to reproduce that session. And that's just to try and pass a certain qualification. But most of us that have been in any sort of education know that that's not the best way to learn. The best way to learn is to discuss things and see people in action, and then observe and maybe then try it out yourself, rather than having that pressure of having to pass a qualification. So, you know, just sitting down, chatting to someone or a group of people for an hour or two, you're going to find out a lot more how they work and what they do with their kids and what their program's like, much more than if you're in a formal qualification-based setting. It's something that I feel really strongly about and that I'd like to look to get into in the future, is somehow doing some coach education that isn't linked to a qualification. So we're there to learn. So we're there to learn from each other, you know, possibly from me with my experience, you know, to set the tone and be there as a resource, really. But for people to come to me and say, well, how would you, I'm working with such an age group, with this is the space that I've got, this is the amount of equipment that I've got, you know, what would you do? And have that backward and forward, have that interaction. Because I think a lot of qualifications or a lot of sessions that you see from demonstrations are not really relevant to many people when they go back to their clubs. So I think it's really finding that balance between having formal qualifications but having information and learning that's relevant to the coach in their environment.
I've been on plenty of courses, and what's delivered on the course is not necessarily possible to deliver at a group's club.
Exactly.
The attitudes are different, the ability levels are different, the attention span is different, so we can't have catch-alls.
Well, I've done them myself. I've been asked to go to conferences, and I've done a session. And as a coach, you want to put on a perfect session because you might have people watching you. So you end up doing something that you think will look good and run well, and not necessarily do with my kids even. You know, sessions that I've done at conferences and things like that are really not that closely related to what I would do with my kids. So, but what you'd want, if you were watching that session, you don't want to watch me coach a perfect session that is totally relevant to you and what you're doing with your kids back at your club. So that's why, I've been speaking to a club in Sweden, and they're looking for me to go over to Sweden for 3 or 4 days and just observe. So be there and observe their coaches, observe their kids, and just provide feedback. And I think I'm really interested in that, and it's something that I hope happens, because I think that's a much better way of me imparting my experience that I've been looking to gain and helping people, rather than just doing random isolated sessions.
On your website, it also mentions a coaches-only tour. What sort of things would the coaches on that tour get to access that they wouldn't normally see?
Yeah, well, that's something that hasn't actually happened. I've never had one of those. But what my vision of it would be to have a group of coaches. I've got good relations with a number of clubs in America. I've tried to bring this off, but it's never quite happened.
Right.
But what I'd like to do is bring a group of coaches over to England. It could be English coaches even, but get a group of coaches together maybe for 4 or 5 days and go and observe some sessions. But again, once you've seen the session, discuss what's happening, or have those forums where we discuss certain situations, and I will then put on sessions according to their requirements. But also what I'd want to do is go and watch some games. So in maybe 4 or 5 days, watch 2 or 3 games, maybe professional games, maybe academy games, and then discuss the games afterwards. You know, and just getting back to this idea of talking football. You know, just sitting around with people in an informal situation where no one's afraid to speak, and just talking about the game and what they saw in the game, how this certain team played, and discussing their situation and how maybe they could look to adapt what they're doing with their club from what they've seen in that particular session or that game. So again, as I was saying before, it's getting away from a formal coach education to a much more informal, interactive way of people learning.
Talking about education, you mentioned at the beginning, and Chris mentioned, that before you got into the game, you got yourself a degree.
Yeah.
Recently, there has been something with Wayne Rooney, talk about him not getting any GCSEs. And his response was kind of like, yeah, I'm cool with that. is it difficult for people to combine football with an education now?
I think it's very difficult to be with a professional club and continue an education, because I think with clubs now, they're wanting more and more time with the players, and a lot of clubs now operate a day release scheme so that players will come out of school maybe one or two afternoons a week, so they'll miss school there. And then at 16, when they've done the GCSEs, then they pretty much have to choose between education and football, which is extremely early. And it would be great, in my opinion, to have a programme whereby someone could continue their education to a high degree and also play football to that standard as well. And I've tried to do that at Repton School. I mean, we had a boy called Johnny Gorman who was a scholar at Wolverhampton Wanderers and a sixth form pupil at Repton School. And he shared his time between Wolverhampton Wanderers and Repton School. And for the 2 years of his sixth form, he ended up with three A-levels to a standard where he could go to university. But he actually got a professional contract from Wolves. And even during his time at Repton, he played seven or eight times for the Northern Ireland full international team. So he came away with A-levels, international caps, full international caps, and a professional contract. So it can be done. It's possible. But unfortunately, a lot of the times, the school will want make their demands on a boy for education, and the club makes their demands, and it ends up that there's not a compromise. So I would like to see a lot more emphasis on education in football, especially bearing in mind that the boys that sign at 16, by the time they're 21, the statistics are that only about one in five are actually still in football by the time they're 21. Those are the boys that go full-time into the football at 16. So that's a huge drop-off. And if they've not got their good GCSEs and they've not got any A-levels, then there's no way that they can do what I did and use my degree for when I finished playing football.
Do you think there's an attitude in the game that does not encourage people to be educated?
In my opinion, yes. I think that a lot of people in clubs just see the world of football, and so they think that the only way forward for a boy is to be a professional footballer. Whereas for some boys, that's absolutely the case. You know, the best chance they've got of being successful in their life is in professional football. But there's lots of boys who have got lots of other abilities and lots of other opportunities, and they should be allowed, at 16, they should be allowed to explore all those different opportunities as well. And certainly to get your A-levels, I think, is vital, because if once you've got your A-levels, if you then went into professional football for a couple of years and it didn't work out, you could still then use your A-levels to go to university. Whereas if you don't have A-levels and you're 20, 21, then there's very little opportunity for you to access higher education.
But if the attitude within the game is not pro-education, then it's unlikely to ever really happen.
This is what, in my opinion, this is one way that clubs could distinguish themselves, because clubs are trying to sign good footballers. And so for me, I look at a boy that is possibly an excellent footballer, but he's also very good academically, that maybe he's looking to get A grades at GCSE. Well, if as a football club, you provide a scholarship scheme from 16 to 18 that isn't just based purely on football, but provides a fantastic education as well, then that will be attractive to that boy, surely. So it's a way of attracting good players by not just providing the football, but providing high quality education as well. And the weak isn't that the boys can't train every minute of every day. It's physically impossible. So there's plenty of time during the week for them to attend lessons and attend their football as well. It just needs, say, like with Johnny Gorman with Wolverhampton Wanderers, that it just has to be worked out. And you're talking, Repton School is near Burton upon Trent, and obviously Wolverhampton Wanderers in the West Midlands, there's quite a distance there. But if you actually had both of those very close to each other, so had the education on the site of the football club or very close to that, there's not much travelling at all. So it's perfectly possible that the boys could have education in the morning and train in the afternoon, or train in the morning, education in the afternoon, and even train again in the evening. It's possible, but it just needs the will of clubs to recognise how important it could be in producing also rounded individuals. You'd rather have, if, as an employee, you'd rather have someone that was educated and was intelligent as a rounded person, rather than someone that was purely one-dimensional and all they ever knew was football.
And once they've got their A-levels, if they do become pros, like you said, they can't train every hour of the day. That's how a lot of players end up getting themselves into trouble. Once they've got their A-levels, they could use that time to get themselves further education. I know some that do, but it's a very small number.
But again, it's a cultural thing. You know, it's got to be something that is seen as being positive, rather than if you try and pursue education in football, then a lot of the time that's looked down upon. You know, you get certain players, oh, well, he reads a broadsheet newspaper.
Yeah.
He gets the mickey taken out of him.
Yeah.
So the culture within football is very much to mock education. And so that's something that I think the people in authority of football clubs and in governing bodies, they should work extremely hard to try and promote a very pro-education culture, so that actually, would it be great if it was seen as embarrassing and something to mock if you didn't have an education? You know, that it was the norm that people continued with an education. And I know that clubs will say, well, they do a BTEC. You know, the boys that have scholarships at 16, they do a BTEC, but really, if everyone's honest, a BTEC in sports studies that they generally do is not a particularly valuable qualification to have. Whereas obviously A-levels have got a much higher currency. So having the ambition to say most of our scholars are going to pursue A-levels and we're going to promote education, I think would be a far better stance to take than just disregarding education, really.
Just finally, child protection has been in the news a lot recently. What advice would you give to aspiring coaches to maybe protect themselves from allegations?
Firstly, I would say I would take this subject very seriously. Child protection is extremely important, and if you are going to be involved with kids football or kids sport in any capacity, then you need to make sure that you read all the relevant information. There's lots of things online. The FA put on some great videos to educate people. So don't just focus on the football side of it, like everyone wants to just focus on the training session and the games. Make sure you are totally educated in the child protection issues, so that when you go into a situation with children, you know exactly what you're facing, and you have to make sure that you and the children are protected at all times. So anything that you say or do is following the guidelines that are issued by the Football Association.
And what would some of the tips be, like if you're going one-on-one with a child, make sure there's another child or another adult there?
Do it in public. I mean, so one of the ways that I've learned is the most effective is speaking to a kid one-on-one, you know, during a game or a training session. But you do that, you know, you have a word, say, Chris, come here a second, and you call them over and you speak to them in front of everyone so that everyone's there and everyone can see what's happening, that you're having that conversation with the young player and it's purely about football or whatever it might be, because you might call him over and have a little giggle with him because establishing that relationship and you know, making sure that you connect with the kid is really important. So it might be about anything, but it's done in public. You know, a situation where you go into a room on your own with a child is just a complete no-no and something that people must be aware of. And if you do, you know, if it's a serious situation for some reason where that child needs to be isolated to discuss, you know, maybe a disciplinary issue, then you must make sure that there are other people there as well to act as witnesses to what you've said and done during that conversation.
No lifts. Don't give a child a lift.
That's a
classic one, especially at grassroots level.
Absolutely. You think you're helping and you think you're doing a good thing, but you're just putting yourself into a difficult situation. And the child, because the child, you know, everyone's told not to do that as a child, not to go into a car with an adult. So, yeah, I think it's from both points of view, protecting the child and protecting the adult as well.
That's it. Before we finish, do you want to plug your social media and coaches would like to get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. My handle is tom_ssoccer. I'm also, my Specialist Soccer Tours is on Facebook. And so you get my website earlier, specialistsoccertours.co.uk.
Yeah.
If there are people out there that would like to get in touch to discuss tours or festivals or even if we could get this coaches only, you know, sort of informal coach education event off the ground, then you know, please look to get in touch that way. My email for that is info@speciallysoccertours.co.uk as well. So, yeah, several ways if people want to get in touch.
Yeah, I'll put all the links in the description below this interview. So I've really enjoyed speaking to you today. I'm sure Peter has as well. And yeah, we'd love to have you on again in the future. So.
Okay, it's been a pleasure, Chris.
Okay, thank you.
And Peter, nice to meet you. Take care. Thanks. See you now. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Right, so a huge thanks to Tom for joining us tonight. Next week we'll be joined by former assistant head coach of Charlton and current development phase scout at Everton, Damian Matthew. So it should be a good one. So, we haven't discussed scouting networking before. So.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, and good night.